And here now is the old mole's Bill Resnick to talk with Ashley Albies of the National Lawyers Guild.
Ashley Albies, welcome to KABU.
Thank you, Bill.
Ashley is a local attorney, recently chair of the National Lawyers Guild, a long tenure for 8 years, done a lot of work. Ashley's done a lot of pro bono work for civil rights, civil liberties. She's the attorney now, for example, the Albina Ministerial Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Ashley, tell us about the National Lawyers Guild in Portland, the kinds of work you do, and then we can discuss what's likely to happen in the near future in the Trump presidency, as he apparently is ready to carry on and intensify a lot of oppressive policies that have been developing for the last 30 years with regard to dissent.
So the National Lawyers Guild is a national legal organization made up of law students, legal workers, lawyers, and jailhouse lawyers.
And jailhouse lawyers.
And jailhouse lawyers.
Oh, good.
Yes.
Yeah.
So in our Constitution, it states that we practice law and we use the law, and we strongly believe that human rights are more sacred than property interests. And so at the national level, we have chapters all over the country. We have annual conventions. Here in Portland, we've had a pretty strong chapter for the past couple decades. Currently, we provide legal observers, folks with green hats out at mass demonstrations that monitor the conduct of the police and document the police response to mass demonstrations, and then provide legal support to individuals who have been arrested during those demonstrations. It's called the Protester Project and the Legal Observer Program. And we have a core group of really strong legal observers who have been out on the streets in all kinds of conditions to provide that support for the demonstrators. We're all volunteer groups, so many of our members provide support for folks who are challenging their arrests or have filed complaints with the Independent Police Review Division through the city's program of the IPR process. And historically, we've provided support for folks who have gone through the Citizen Review Committee appealing that IPR decision. We've provided legal support to Right to Dream 2, challenging the fines that were imposed on them by the city. We've had folks in our organization work with people on housing and housing justice issues, work with labor unions on organizing projects and supporting labor unions. We have members who've provided legal support to immigration, folks that are organizing around immigration and detention and the mass deportations that took place under Obama and are going to continue under Trump. We have folks doing all sorts of progressive and movement-supportive legal work
right.
in the community.
Just to add to a few that I know about, my understanding is that the National Lawyers Guild did a lot of work trying to stop the police from illegal surveillance over starting quite a while ago with the Red Squad. There was a Red Squad
yes.
in Portland, and
yeah,
they've had to give up a lot of their materials, but
right.
they still seem to be
right.
trying to do some of the same stuff.
Right. The Portland chapter has been involved in police oversight, whether it be policy work or stakeholder groups that work on police reform efforts. We oppose the Joint Terrorism Task Force when it was first proposed. Each time it comes up, we work on those issues as well. Have been active in opposing mass surveillance and using surveillance tactics and over-policing as a means of targeting communities.
Right. And the gang enforcement mm-hmm. abuses.
That's a major issue. I mean, I don't know that the NLG specifically, I mean, there's criminal defense lawyers who have been addressing that, and there's organizations that are working on those issues. The legal framework is, there have been challenges. For example, there was the Oregonian just did some coverage on the gang enforcement team and how one gets designated as a gang member or gang member affiliate. And there was a legal challenge to originally how they first started putting people on those lists. So they changed up the way that they provide that designation. Now they give people notice and an opportunity to challenge it. Whether that's sufficient, I think, is a different question.
Yeah, what about the stop and frisk stuff now, this very, very aggressive policing, which they really do in, quote, minority neighborhoods and with kids who wear hoodies,
mm-hmm.
it seems to me. They're very, very aggressive. Are you involved in that stuff in Portland now?
Well, I've heard from people. I have clients who have experienced a lot more police attention, and it appears based on the color of their skin. Most of my black male clients, I also do a lot of employment discrimination litigation.
But
many of my clients, if I'm representing them for reasons not related to police interaction, had described having been pulled over multiple times by police officers, described having been searched by police officers, despite there not being any apparent justification for that. So I think those issues are present and prevalent in Portland. The Portland Police Bureau's own collection of their stop and search data reflects that they are disproportionately stopping people of color and searching people of color, and that's been true for decades, or for as long as they've been collecting that information.
This is the Old Mole Variety Hour. Bill Resnick here. I'm talking to Ashley Albies, who is the chair of the, still doing a lot of the administrative work for the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild. They've been involved over the years in nearly every effort to maintain civil liberties in this city in one way or another. Ashley, let's talk about the recent past. The gradual narrowing and the attack on dissent, the attack on protests, the effort to suppress protests that's really been going on more and more intensely, starting with the, it seems to me, even before the year 2000, with their free speech zones and efforts to curtail dissents, to make it more dangerous, to preemptively arrest people just to sort of to make life difficult for protesters and chill civil liberties. If there's a real good chance of you being arrested and held for days, the New York police are the worst, but they do it all over the country. Yeah. It makes people think, well, maybe I shouldn't go to this protest. I have an appointment at the doctor the next week or whatever it is. It's very inconvenient to be arrested and held for a long time and expensive, too. They're doing more and more of it, it seems to me. Tell us about your sense of the trends, even through the Obama administration, also of heavy surveillance, all of the rest of it, super cops, FBI entrapment.
There's a lot there.
And militarization right. of the police. But it seems to me that Trump is probably going to intensify all of this, but right. why don't we go through the list of the stuff that he's likely to intensify?
Right. No. I mean, the tools already exist, and that is a product of the last several presidential administrations, Democratic or Republican. There's this free speech zone practice that has cropped up in the past couple decades in response to the 90s, which is when I first began attending protests. And I didn't go to law school until the early 2000s. But even back then, there were these cordoning off spaces for demonstrators, for mass demonstrations, for demonstrators to kind of get trapped in these spaces. And under the First Amendment, Supreme Court has upheld these what's called the reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions, that the government can put certain restrictions on demonstrations and on the expression under the First Amendment. Whether those restrictions are reasonable is a different question and what that means. And there's a sentiment among folks that engage in demonstrations and folks that support the First Amendment and a bold and robust First Amendment practice is that cordoning off people into these, quote, free speech zones where sometimes they're miles away, like at the political conventions where they nominate their presidential candidates every 4 years, there's been the practice of sending folks into these free speech zones that are far away from the delegates and far away from the folks that these demonstrators yeah. seek to impact by their presence.
Well, in Portland, they did a free speech zone near the airport, as I recall, in a area that was cordoned off with not only fences, but barbed wire on
right.
the top of the
right.
fence. Once you get into your free speech zone, right. it could be a concentration camp zone, right. the way they've in fact done the structuring of
right.
it.
Right. So these reasonable time, place, and manner restrictions are a construct of the court, right? There's nothing in the First Amendment that says anything about reasonable time, place, and manner, although folks can agree that some limitation might be reasonable given how the court has framed it as a, quote, legitimate government concern. And so if the government concern is that they don't want to be bothered by dissenting voices, many would argue, including myself, that that is not a legitimate governmental concern and that the very purpose of First Amendment activities, especially mass demonstrations, is to show the government that you disagree with the course of conduct that they're taking. So to cordon people off or to send people into a less visible area completely undermines the purpose of those mm-hmm. demonstrations.
Or to demand that people, before they even schedule a demonstration,
get a permit.
But where you, in fact, have to follow their guidelines and where they get angry and then mass in these RoboCop uniforms. In Portland, we sort of faced them down in the year 2000, right. And they had to change their tactics some,
right.
Partly because there were photographs of what they were doing at the time, especially the horse patrols. That was really egregious, what they did, actually, in that demonstration.
Right, and in
herding people against the river with these motorcycle things.
In subsequent demonstrations, like when George Bush was here, and what was that, 2004? I can't remember actually what year it was. It might have been earlier than that. The Iraq War protests, and when there was a tremendous amount of force used against individuals, and there was a lawsuit that arose out of that, that Alan Graf, who was a former attorney here in Portland, that litigated that case along with Stu Sugarman and several other folks as well. Myself and my colleague Shauna Kerfey had authored a recommendation report several years ago arguing that non-permitted protests should be treated just like permitted protests, and that when it comes to pepper spray and use of horses and use of that type of weaponry, that should be very, very substantially curtailed and limited, especially when you have mass demonstrations where children are going to be there, people with compromised immune systems should have the right to take the streets and feel safe engaging in First Amendment protected activity without fear of being pepper sprayed or fear of having their health threatened by doing that.
This is Bill Resnick for The Old Mole. I'm talking to Ashley Albius, who's a local attorney, was the chair of the National Lawyers Guild for a long time and is still working with all of the lawyers and doing a lot of administrative work and doing cases and representing clients like the Albina Ministerial Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Very active. Ashley, the Trump administration is very likely to... In fact, what we're seeing now in the Dakota Access Pipeline case, get very, very aggressive, and even at the beginning, to show people that they will not accept anything. And lawyers are only part of the story. In fact, that heavy policing and the efforts to destroy and discourage and make people fearful of dissenting, previous administrations have done it too and been met with real strong response and resistance. I think it's going to have to happen again. I'm sure the lawyers are prepared. I mean, there's been so many precedents, and there's a lot of people. I think the movements are going to also have to really step up to the plate. There's millions of people who Trump is a minority president, incidentally. People really don't like him or know him, even some who voted for him out of resentment of previous elites who've done nothing for them. It will be possible to really challenge them. And my guess is they are not ready to fire guns at people, which would be a real terrible thing. Right. Kent State was a disaster for the government, a complete disaster when they did fire some guns. They're going to be fairly, it seems to me, restrained in that. We really do have to be talking about movements. The law is not going to protect us unless the movements are really strong and really threaten the popularity and the control that the oppressive forces are trying to get people to submit to.
Right. I mean, as we've seen in the past few years with the Black Lives Matter movement of people taking to the streets and expressing their outrage, expressing their resistance, and there is power in those numbers. In conjunction with the Black Lives Matter movement being at the forefront of racial justice movement work, we've seen the increased militarization response. And these local police jurisdictions are not paying for those weapons themselves. Those are being given to them by the federal government. And that occurred under the Obama administration. That occurred under the Bush administration. It occurred under the Clinton administration. We've seen it accelerate in the past couple administrations. But I think that's an important point to remember, is that even though these local police officers, sheriff's departments, or local police departments are the ones that are responding to these local demonstrations, they are getting support from the federal government. And in Oregon here, we have some of the things that Trump is going to do. There's a whole list of things that he's expressed an intent to do, such as targeting our immigrant community members for deportation at an alarming rate and an alarming number. Here in Oregon, we have this statute that states that local law enforcement and state law enforcement are specifically directed not to enforce immigration law. I think we have some protections that are unique to Oregon, and that there are laws and there are strategies that activists, organizers, lawyers can use to resist the kind of federalization of our local law enforcement to enforce Trump's agenda. And we need to be clear on those things and make sure that our elected leaders are making the right choices to protect all of us in the state and all of our community members in the state, regardless of their legal status. And I think the focus needs to be on using those opportunities to push back against the repressive system, to remind elected leaders that control our local government, our local instrumentalities of government, being the police, the police bureaus and the sheriff's departments, from targeting individuals that are more vulnerable. Not to say they should be targeting other individuals who are not as vulnerable, but I think there are strategies that people can use and organizations can use and organizers can use and everyday people can use to build solidarity with each other to push back. And that's what people need to be doing. The lawyer part of that is to assist people in getting out of jail if they're arrested or to bring civil action if they're harmed or if their First Amendment rights are infringed. But it takes coordination and it takes everybody working together to have a united front, so to speak, to make sure that we're all supporting each other in doing this type of work.
Yeah, I think it's going to happen. In fact, there are real possibilities of going on the offensive.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think we want to remain on the defense. We want to go on the offensive, particularly on things like prison reform or the way they treat arrestees
and
the mass incarceration that we're having now and the destruction of minority communities by holding and incarcerating this enormous number of people, white and black, actually, but the black working class is getting it the worst.
Right.
It seems to me there's a strong majority for changing a lot of that, even within amongst some people who voted for Trump. And again, he was a minority president.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can build upon those challenges, all kinds of challenges to undemocratic authority.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think there's a lot of opportunities here. If you look at the disparities in Multnomah County with regard to policing and incarceration, those exist here just as they do everywhere else. And there are a lot of incredibly passionate, well-organized, smart people working to decreasing those disparities and to make sure that everybody's safe and everybody's protected and treated more equally in the way that charging decisions are made, the way that arrests occur, the way that sentencing happens, all those things.
Yeah, all the movements of every kind. They all have an interest of stopping this oppression of dissent of many kinds that go on. And I think everybody understands it, too.
Yeah, and there's a lot of interests and there's a lot of work to be done. And I think the opportunities to support each other are there and they're present at all times. And there's what has been very effective in Portland and also just incredibly inspiring is to see the way that community groups and advocacy groups come together and work in solidarity and work to support each other. Something that came up just last week in front of the city council was the socially responsible investment recommendations, which was to divest from banks like Wells Fargo that support private prison industries, support Caterpillar that supports occupation and is providing the means by which the Dakota Access Pipeline is going to be dug. So there are a lot of opportunities, not just legal and not just in the streets, but political as well, that policy work that people can be doing and pushing for those changes at the local level. Because the Trump, as we know, the Trump administration is going to come down hard in so many ways. Immigration, Trump gets to put forth an attorney general, of course, but also set priorities for the Department of Justice. We know that he's not likely going to be pushing the civil rights agenda that was advanced under Obama, and that has impacts in education. It has impacts in the criminal legal system. It has far-ranging impacts, and folks have to work together at a local level to push back against that, to support each other in pushing back against that.
Ashley Albies, thanks so much for talking to us. Keep up the good work with the National Lawyers Guild and others. Thank you.
Thank you, Bill.